listening to Bart Cop Radio.
Having given the order, the president walked alone around the circle behind the White House. Much later, he told Woodward, quote, "As I walked around the circle, I prayed that our troops be safe, be protected by the Almighty."
I hate to interrupt, but I can't let that go by. Instead of depending on the invisible, non-existent cloud being to protect these boys, why didn't you send them some Kevlar? Why didn't you send them with enough guns, maybe, I don't know, one per man? Would that be too much to ask of the invading army? George, you could have waited a couple of weeks or a couple of months until everything was in place, but no, you got in a hurry. You and Cheney had a hard-on for this war that would not quit. You just had to invade. You just had to invade right now. Couldn't wait one more day. You couldn't give the Kevlar factory another 30 days to come up with another 10,000 Kevlar vests. No, you just couldn't wait. Couldn't wait for that. You couldn't wait till you could give each soldier a gun. You couldn't wait to get enough medical supplies or antidotes or whatever it is that the guys had to take for the... No, you had to rush in right away. You had to hurry, hurry, hurry. And then after you send these guys over there without guns, without Kevlar, without the equipment they need, without the intelligence, then you say, "I hope God protects them." Well, yeah, I got an idea. Let's put you in a ring with Mike Tyson, and we'll ask God to protect you. What do you think, George? You up for that? One other thing, and this is going to some fellas in Iraq, so I'm not for a second going to pretend like I know what military strategy is all about. But remember in the first days of the war, they went in too fast. They found no resistance as the first flank, whatever, went in. They found no resistance, so they just put the pedal to the metal, and they got so far ahead that they exposed the guys in the middle. Remember in the old days, you take a wagon train out west, and the purpose of that was if you get 40 or 50 wagons together, you got 40 or 50 guys with guns. And if the Indians attack, at least you got a chance. If it's you and the wife and kids, and you're out in the middle of Oklahoma territories and the Cherokee attack, you don't have much of a chance because you got one gun. Maybe Junior knows how to shoot, but that's why they had wagon trains, so they would have a bunch of people at the same time. So when these guys go into Iraq, the guys up front, just like Bush and Cheney, they got in a hurry. They just stepped on the gas pedal and they zoomed 20, 30, 50, 100, 200, 500 miles ahead of the guys behind them. That left giant gaps. That meant they were open to these little guerrilla sneak attack deals. How many men did we lose for no reason other than they got in a hurry? They're supposed to be disciplined in the armed services. Did their adrenaline get the best of them? And they thought, oh, we don't see any people. We better step on it. So the guys who could went faster, and the big heavy tanks, the trucks that had the gasoline and stuff, no, they're way the hell back there. So what good does it do you to zoom ahead and run out of gas, and now you're sitting there helpless, waiting for a truck to show up that's going to be here tomorrow, hopefully, because you went ahead? What the hell's wrong with those people? Why did they do that way? Again, I have no idea. I've never been at war. That's why I respect the people that have. I have no idea what to do on a battlefield, but I know common sense tells you to stick together when you got a convoy, when you got a wagon train. Don't zoom ahead and get lost. That whole Jessica Lynch thing. They got lost. How do you get lost when you're following a guy? Well, you get lost when the guy you're following gets too far ahead and you can't see him. A lot of lives were lost because they got in a hurry, and it started at the top. Bush and Cheney and their insatiable hard-on for war, they just couldn't wait. I guess they told Tommy Franks, and I guess Tommy Franks told the commanders, hurry, 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 go, 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 fast you can, do it, do it, do it. We lost a lot of people because they got in a hurry, and nobody wants to ask why.
Going into this period, I was praying for strength to do the Lord's will. I'm surely not going to justify war based upon God, understand that. Nevertheless, in my case, I pray that I be as good a messenger of His will as possible.
We have a president that is the textbook definition of insane. If the war goes bad, it's not his fault. God told him to. Just like that woman in Texas who took the rocks and beat the heads in of her young children, because God told her to. It's not her fault. For the first time in my memory, Texas passed a chance to execute somebody. Maybe they do it all the time and it just never makes the papers, but I've never heard of that before, because the lady was that insane that she was listening to God telling her to kill these kids. Well, when the president listens to God and God tells him to murder Iraq, we just take that, hey, it's the Lord's will, and George is too good a man to lie, so it's got to be God's will. The whole country is nuts. It's a good damn thing that internet came along, because it's the only place where you can get the truth. It's the only place where you have a chance to hear the truth. The newspapers, the networks, the talk radio Nazis, the boobs on TV, they all say this is perfect. This is fine. It doesn't matter how many dead people we have, as long as Bush gets that oil and God is made happy. Make the invisible cloud being happy and make the idiot monkey happy. That's the goals of America, and ipso facto, the goals of the universe, because America runs everything. We're caught in this illogic wormhole, and we're not coming out of it until Kerry decides to fight back. Boy, I hope I'm wrong about Kerry. If Kerry wins this election, I want everybody listening to this to write and tell me what an idiot I am and how wrong I was about Kerry. I want you to hold me to that. I don't want to be right. This is one of those deals where I want to be wrong. Please, Koresh, make me wrong.
Did he ask his father for any advice about all of this, the president?
President Bush said, well, no, and then he got defensive about it. Then he said something that really struck me. He said of his father, he is the wrong father to appeal to for advice, the wrong father to go to appeal to in terms of strength. And then he said, there's a higher father that I appeal to.
Boy, if that isn't the creepiest part of this whole interview. You see, he went to his dad, and his dad said, don't do it. If you go into Iraq, you're going to own it. You're going to be in charge of it forever. You'll never get out. It's a quagmire. You're going to be occupying a Muslim country with massive hostility. You can't go there. You can't do that. And he says, well, I can't use you as a mentor. You don't see things right. So then he goes to God, and he says, God, I want to murder Iraq and steal their oil. And God didn't object. You know, Bush has got to have some kind of tumor in his head, because when he talks to God, apparently God's talking back. And he says, God, I want to invade Iraq and kill Saddam and steal all their oil and their assets. God says, you go, boy, you go. Oh, this is creepy. We need someone to have a good, long psychological and medical look inside the president's brain, because he's seeing things that aren't there, and he's not seeing the things that are there. His dad told him, don't do it. His dad knows so much more about the world. His dad has a brain and told him, don't do it. Scowcroft told him, don't do it. Schwarzkopf told him, don't do it. All the sane people told him, don't do it. But those crazy chicken hawk neocons, they just had to have it. The whole world rests on saving us from Saddam, they promised. So Bush went into Iraq. 700 dead, never-ending quagmire. And if you say the word quagmire, you're helping the terrorists, so knock it off.
Beyond not asking his father about going to war, Woodward was startled to learn the president did not ask key cabinet members either.
The president, in making the decision to go to war, did not ask his Secretary of Defense for an overall recommendation, did not ask his Secretary of State, Colin Powell, for his recommendation.
Well, actually, there's no need. I mean, if you and God are a team, and you can't be wrong, and you've never made a mistake, why bother to get input from other people? Because, see, when you're perfect, anyone else you might talk to is imperfect, and so they could only taint your judgment. G. Gordon Liddy's fond of saying, when you pour clean water into dirty water, you get more dirty water. Well, that's what happened with super clean, godlike Bush. If he were to talk to someone else, all they could do would be to contaminate his perfectly clear logic. Because when God tells you to do something, you don't have to question it. You just do it. Whatever that tumor in his head tells him, he's going to do. If the tumor says launch, he's going to launch.
The president told you he didn't have to ask Rumsfeld, didn't have to ask Powell about going to war, because he knew what they thought. But the president did ask Condi Rice, his national security advisor, and Karen Hughes, his political communications advisor. Woodward says both supported going to war.
Well, it goes without saying that a Russian expert and a piano player and a provost, whatever the hell that is, from Stanford, would know a whole lot more about defense than the Secretary of Defense. That makes sense. And Karen Hughes down in Texas? She's pretty good with politics, yeah, I'll grant you that, but what the hell does she know about geopolitical war? What does she know about the history of the Middle East and your odds of getting out of a quagmire? Surely she knows a lot more than that Colin Powell guy, who we all have to admit he's just on the team so Bush can say, I got a darky on my inner circle. That's the only reason he's there. They hate Colin Powell now. Colin Powell's trying to distance himself from this big quagmire. He's telling Bob Woodward, I never wanted to go in Iraq, which we all knew, but he wanted to be his master's boy. So he backed up every lie that Bush told him to do. Bush told him to go to the UN and give them a bunch of lies, and he said, I won't do it, this is bullshit, and he threw the papers in the air. And they said, now, Colin, be a good boy, do like you're told. And they patted him on the head, and Colin said, okay, I'll do it. And now that all these, we've got these 700 dead, and we're in this quagmire that will never end, now Colin Powell's saying, hey, don't look at me. One other thing, this is kind of off topic, but on 9/11, Richard Clark was in charge of the Situation Room at the White House. Now think about that. The most critical day America's ever had, Richard Clark was running the Situation Room at the White House, while the Bush boy was out running scared from state to state. But somehow, the first time he had a word of criticism about the administration, he was this loose cannon with a temper who didn't know how to work with others. It was such a bad man and an evil person and not too balanced and had a lot of personal problems and were not too sure about his stability. No, we gave him the Situation Room on 9/11, but he's an unstable man. You know, it doesn't always work, this retroactive, a little bit nutty and a little bit slutty. It doesn't always work, especially after you put the guy in charge on 9/11, when the president was AWOL again.
And in the wake of the war, according to Woodward, there is a deep rift between Powell and Cheney.
The relationship between Cheney and Powell is essentially broken down. They can't talk. They don't communicate. Powell feels that Cheney drove the decision to go to war in Iraq. And Cheney feels that Powell has not been sufficiently supportive of the president in the war or in the aftermath.
And which of the two was more prescient about how Iraq would turn out?
All of Powell's warnings. Think of the consequences. Pottery barn rules. If you break it, you own it. And that's exactly what has happened in Iraq. We own it. In a way, they've had victory without success.
That's another trait of the BFEE. They punish the people who are right. They punish the people who are correct in their assessments. You know, all these people coming up from like the EPA saying, sir, we can't do that. That's going to massively increase pollution. They say, oh, you want to repeat that or do you want to keep your job? And I say, oh, hey, I'm sorry, I got nothing to say. Anybody who doesn't kowtow to the insane, never-elected usurper monkey is a bad person. It's not that they are good people with different opinions. They are disloyal. Number one with this crowd, loyalty, no matter what. Sieg Heil, no matter what. If the president says there's not a monkey sitting on his shoulders, then we don't care. If the monkey's got his hands over the president's eyes, there is no monkey. If Bush says there's no monkey, there's no monkey. It's always been that way. Bush has always been so coddled his whole life. Everything he's ever wanted. I want to rape that girl. I want to get her pregnant. Oh, okay, we can make that go away. I want to do a bunch of cocaine, and when I get caught, I want you to make it go away. Oh, okay. I want to be a hero. I want to be a pilot. I want to fly a plane. Oh, I don't want to do that no more. Oh, okay, we can arrange that. All his life it's been that way. Never been told no. Spoiled to the max. Never had to do a day's work. Born on third base. And then we turned around and give him the White House. And he got it right after a guy who worked his way up, a poor Arkansas boy, without a father, who had to work, who had to build his career every inch at a time, honestly, without help from his super-rich, famous dad, who was connected. Boy, this Bush boy, he is a throwback in several ways.
How does the president think history will judge him for going to war in Iraq?
He said, history, we won't know. We'll all be dead.
Well, I stand corrected. I believe that is the scariest thing he said. The monkey doesn't have the brains to realize that history starts today. History starts tomorrow. Today's newspaper is the history of yesterday. And you're still alive, Mr. President. Get that. He's got this warped mental problem that he doesn't see the world the way you and I do. Maybe it's back to that never worked a day in his life. He doesn't have a way to appreciate what's around him because he's never earned anything. It's always been handed to him. So to him, everything is just here for his pleasure. You remember when he was on Letterman, he grabbed Letterman's producer's sweater and wiped his glasses? Have you ever in your life heard of such crude, rude behavior? And they're going to let this man in the White House? But the idea that Bush can't understand that history is right here and right now, hopefully at some point he'll be out of the White House, and then people will write the history of the Bush years. And he's still going to be alive, unless he eats another pretzel.
This is not a pansy liberal show. It's Bart Cop Radio.